Chapter 2. I will begin, then, by stating that Prince K was not so very, very old, although to look at him you would think he must fall to pieces every moment, so decayed, or rather worn out, was he. At Mordasoff all sorts of strange things were told of him. Some declared that the old prince's wits had forsaken him. All agreed that it was passing strange that the owner of a magnificent property of 4,000 souls, a man of rank, and one who could have, if he liked, a great influence, and play a great part in his country's affairs, that such a man should live all alone upon his estate, and make an absolute hermit of himself, as did Prince K. Many who had known him a few years before insisted upon it that he was very far from loving solitude then, and was as unlike a hermit as anyone could possibly be. However, here is all I have been able to learn authentically as to his antecedents, etc. Some time or other, in his younger days, which must have been a mighty long while ago, the prince made a most brilliant entry into life. He knocked about and enjoyed himself, and sang romantic songs, and wrote epigrams, and led a fast life generally, very often abroad, and was full of gifts and intellectual capacity. Of course, he very soon ran through his means, and when old age approached, he suddenly found himself almost penniless. Somebody recommended him to betake himself to his country seat, which was about to be sold by public auction. So off he went with that intention, but called in at Mordasoff, and stopped there 6 months. He liked this provincial life, and, while in our town, he spent every farthing he had left in the world, continuing his reckless life as of old, gallivanting about and forming intimacies with half the ladies of Mordasoff. He was a kind-hearted, good sort of a man, but of course not without certain princely failings, which, however, were accounted here to be nothing but evidences of the highest breeding, and for this reason caused a good effect instead of aversion. The ladies especially were in a state of perpetual ecstasy over their dear guest. They cherished the fondest and tenderest recollections of him. There were also strange traditions and rumours about the prince. It was said that he spent more than half the day at his toilet table, and that he was, in fact, made up of all sorts of little bits. No one could say when or how he had managed to fall to pieces so completely. He wore a wig, whiskers, moustache, and even an espagnol, all false to a hair, and of a lovely raven black, besides which he painted and rouged every day. It was even said that he managed to do away with his wrinkles by means of hidden springs, hidden somehow in his wig. It was said, further, that he wore stays, in consequence of the want of a rib which he had lost in Italy, through being caused to fly, involuntarily, out of a window during a certain love affair. He limped with his left foot, and it was whispered that the said foot was a cork one, a very scientific member, made for him in place of the real one which came to grief during another love affair in Paris this time. But what will not people say? At all events, I know for a fact that his right eye was a glass one. Beautifully made, I confess, but still glass. His teeth were false, too. For whole days at a time he used to wash himself in all sorts of patent waters and scents and pomades. However, no one could deny that even then he was beginning to indulge in senile drivel and chatter. It appeared his career was about over. He had seen his best days. Everyone knew that he had not a kopeck left in the world. Then, suddenly and unexpectedly, an old relative of his, who had always lived in Paris, but from whom he never had had the slightest hope of inheritance, died, after having buried her legal heir exactly a month before. The prince, to his utter astonishment, turned out to be the next heir, and a beautiful property of 4,000 serfs, just 40 miles from Mordasoff, became his, absolutely and unquestionably. He immediately started off to Petersburg to see to his affairs. Before he departed, however, the ladies of our town gave him a magnificent subscription banquet. They tell how bewitching and delightful the prince was at this last dinner, how he punned and joked and told the most unusual stories, and how he promised to come to Donchanovo, his new property, very soon, and gave his word that on his arrival he would give endless balls and garden parties and picnics and fireworks and entertainments of all kinds for his friends here. For a whole year after his departure, the ladies of the place talked of nothing but these promised festivities, and awaited the arrival of the dear old man with the utmost impatience. At last the prince arrived, but to the disappointment and astonishment of everyone, he did not even call in at Mordasoff on the way, and on his arrival at Donchanovo he shut himself up there, as I have expressed it before, like a very hermit. All sorts of fantastic rumours were bruited about, and from this time the prince's life and history became most secret, mysterious, and incomprehensible. In the first place, it was declared that the prince had not been very successful in St. Petersburg, that many of his relations, future heirs and heirs presumptive and so on, had wished to put the prince under some kind of restraint, on the plea of feebleness of intellect, probably fearing that he would run through this property as he had done with the last. And more, some of them went so far as to suggest that he should be popped into a lunatic asylum, and he was only saved by the interference of one of the nearest of kin, who pointed out that the poor old prince was more than half dead already, and that the rest of him must inevitably soon die too, and that then the property would come down to them safely enough without the need of the lunatic asylum. I repeat, what will not people say, especially at our place, Mordasoff? All this, it was said, had frightened the prince dreadfully, so that his nature seemed to change entirely, and he came down to live a hermit life at Donchanovo. Some of our Mordasoff folk went over to welcome him on his arrival, but they were either not received at all, or received in the strangest fashion. The prince did not recognize his old friends. Many people explained that he did not wish to recognize them. Among other visitors to Donchanovo was the governor. On the return of the latter from his visit, he declared that the prince was undoubtedly a little off his head. The governor always made a face if anyone reminded him of this visit of his to Donchanovo. The ladies were dreadfully offended. At last, an important fact was revealed, namely that there was with the prince, and apparently in authority over him, some unknown person of the name of Stepanida Matveyevna, who had come down with him from St. Petersburg, an elderly, fat woman in a calico dress, who went about with the house keys in her hand, and that the prince obeyed this woman like a little child, and did not dare take a step without her leave, that she washed him and dressed him and soothed and petted him just like a nurse with a baby, and lastly, that she kept all visitors away from him, even relations, who, little by little, had begun to pervade the place rather too frequently, for the purpose of seeing that all was right. It was said that this person managed not only the prince, but his estate too. She turned off bailiffs and clerks, she encashed the rents, she looked after things in general, and did it well too, so that the peasants blessed their fate under her rule. As for the prince, it was rumoured that he spent his days now almost entirely at his toilet table, trying on wigs and dress coats, and that the rest of his time was spent playing cards and games with Stepanida Matveyevna, and riding on a quiet old English mare. On such occasions, his nurse always accompanied him in a covered droshky, because the prince liked to ride out of bravado, but was most unsafe in his saddle. He had been seen on foot, too, in a long greatcoat and a straw hat with a wide brim. A pink silk lady's tie round his neck, and a basket on his arm for mushrooms and flowers and berries and so on, which he collected. The nurse accompanied him, and a few yards behind walked a manservant, while a carriage was in attendance on the high road at the side. When any peasant happened to meet him, and with low bow and hat in hand said, "Good morning, Your Highness, our beloved son and father of us all," or some such Russian greeting, he would stick his eyeglass in his eye, nod his head, and say with great urbanity and in French, "Bonjour, mon ami, bonjour." Lots of other rumours there were. In fact, our folks could not forget that the prince lived so near them. What then must have been the general amazement when, one fine day, it was trumpeted abroad that the prince, their curious old hermit prince, had arrived at Mordasov and put up at Maria Alexandrovna's house. Agitation and bewilderment were the order of the day. Everybody waited for explanations and asked one another what could be the meaning of this mystery. Some proposed to go and see for themselves. All agreed that it was most extraordinary. The ladies wrote notes to each other, came and whispered to one another, and sent their maids and husbands to find out more. What was particularly strange, why had the prince put up at Maria Alexandrovna's and not somewhere else? This fact annoyed everyone, but most of all Mrs. Antipova, who happened to be a distant relative of the prince. However, in order to clear up all these mysteries and find an answer to all these questions, we must ourselves go and see Maria Alexandrovna. Will you follow me in, kind reader? It is only 10 in the morning, certainly, as you point out, but I dare say she will receive such intimate friends all the same. Oh, yes, she'll see us, all right.